Forever Dog.
Rose and Jamie are two best friends,
and they love Sex and the City.
And they couldn't help but wonder,
do you love it too?
Carrie,
Miranda,
Samantha,
Charlotte,
Cosmos,
Emotions,
Frenchies,
dudes.
So many dudes.
Every little dude.
All the dudes.
And we couldn't help but wonder.
With Jamie Lee
and Rose Cerno.
I'm Jamie Lee.
And I'm Rose Cerno.
Did it take me an entire whole podcast to come up with a new way of saying it?
I'm so sad.
You know what, you guys? I'm tired.
Okay. No.
It's okay.
We are leaving this in, but we are going to start over because this is our final. We are leaving that part in.
Do you need me to have a little more zestfully clean?
Well, I just think this is the finale of
drum
the
up a little
show.
Excitement.
So let's like give it something. Okay, here
put
we go.
Put on a little smile if you dare.
Yeah, let's put on our fancy clothes. Okay, here we go. I'm Jamie Lee.
And I'm Rose Cerno.
And this is
Couldn't Help But Wonder. A podcast where we talk about Sex and the City and how it relates to us.
Yeah.
Jamie Amanda Lee.
Guys, this is crazy. I can't believe we've covered every single episode of the show.
I know. It's
Wow.
It's exciting and cool, and I feel
a little bit scary.
A little scary.
It's a journey. I mean, I'm visiting my mom. I'm in the bedroom that I was in for 6 months, but now I'm sitting zestfully.
Oh, that's so great.
Yeah, it's like a lot has changed. We've been broken. We emerged.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, this show has taken us on a real journey, both in our televisions and outside.
I know. Jamie, who were you this week?
Ooh, who was I this week? Ooh. I think I was Carrie when she went. Remember that time I don't remember when this was, but remember she went on that really obnoxious date with Big to like an Italian restaurant. And he was like being really annoying about like getting his cigarette lit or something. And like they wanted to kick him out.
Yeah.
And he was just being like really like brazen with the waitstaff. I went to this restaurant called Luigi's last night.
Mamma mia.
Yeah. In like deep Jersey. And it was rated like on Yelp. It had the highest ranking for just like red sauce, like red and white checkered tablecloth type Italian. So I really trusted that and went to this restaurant. The first sight I see when I walk in the door, like before I can take in anything else visually about the restaurant, is a man who's been punched in the face. He was sitting at the table with his wife. And he had
did you go into like a mafia?
I mean, it's Jersey, you know?
This is Jamie, did you like joke on the
80s? I wasn't looking for it. It was like right in my line of vision. It was like, oh, that man was recently punched in the face.
Wow.
There's more. So that was like the first bit of it. Then I look to the left and there's like the tackiest mural of like Florence or something on the wall. Just like they got like the chef's cousin's friend's friend, Vinny, to just like throw a mural on the
wall. Someone who had heard of Florence was like, let me paint a mural for you.
Yeah, definitely heard of it. No, yeah, I know his family's from there distantly. Yeah. And like, yeah, he just sort of painted
the vibe.
He painted the vibe, painted what he knew how to paint. But yeah, it was like a notch above stick figures. And it was just like the goofiest mural. And I thought that was kind of it. Oh, also they were playing like, that's amore, like
of
that
course.
Kind of music.
When the moon hits your eye.
When the moon hits your eye. when the fist hits that guy's face. But anyways, yeah, so that was that. And then I look over to my right and there is the funniest fucking fountain I have ever seen in my life. Okay, first of all, it is like a babbling brook indoors. Okay, multiple rocks. And there was like a pot, like when women bathe themselves in the river, like one of those types of pots dumped over and the water was like cascading out of that. And there was fog coming off of it. There was a fog machine. So it's a foggy babbling brook with an LED light that changed colors. And I was just like, this is the crazy. This is like, this place is doing an impression of itself.
It kind of makes me think that there was like women there in like tight mini dresses with big hair that are like, Vinny, just let me order this meal scallopini.
I mean, there was a table like that. There was also like a really sweet older couple who clearly goes there every Saturday night and they like order their favorite things.
How is the food twist of all twist?
Well, that's what's funny. Okay, so you think you go into this place, you think this place like is such a goofy gimmick. There is no way that they're going to like not have delicious food. Like I was so certain this was going to be delicious.
It's at least going to be cheesy and salty.
Yeah, exactly. It's like kind of hard to fuck up like an eggplant
parm. Italian is good. Yeah.
Exactly. Thank you for saying that. I feel like that's one of our pink cards on Instagram. Italian is good.
It just is. It's
it
like,
just is.
I mean, even like, just buying dry spaghetti and a good canned sauce is like delicious.
Are you kidding? It's still better than like most good
cuisine.
Like, most like, yeah, exactly. Most cuisine. I think spaghetti with red sauce is like really up there.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I was like, surely the food is okay. Can I just say this? I thought the food was going to be at least as good as like if you were to order from a Ray's Pizza or something in the city, where it's like they do a good job. Like it's not fancy, but it tastes really good.
Right.
I was sure that that's what was going to happen, and it was like the nasty. First of all, also highly rated on Yelp. I trust Yelp. Yelp really has never steered me wrong. Like it's pretty. I wouldn't say 10 out of 10, but 9 out of 10.
Like, Yelp, more like yikes.
Yeah, wow.
Just kidding. Wow. I cancel myself.
It is
myself.
More like yikes. Yeah, no, don't do that. But it, it was like really gross. Like the eggplant was like really chewy and like it was not breaded really. And the cheese didn't have any like crusty bubbles. It was just like pure white. And I was just kind of horrified. Also, I ordered this seafood pasta, which was okay. But they had a bunch of different types of seafood in it. And I was like, hey, is there any way we can swap out flounder? That was another thing where it's like, it had flounder in it. I'm
Jamie,
like, okay, what's going
I mean, on? Jamie, you're trying to swap out flounder. Okay, I'm sorry. I have the restaurants back on this one.
No, but can I just say,
Tell us.
If salmon is on the menu in a similar capacity, already, wouldn't it be easy enough for them to just put it in this like mix of seafood? Like if it's clams, mussels, calamari,
on a
flounder,
on a taste, level, you never put salmon in a chiapino or a bouillabaisse. It doesn't go
That's
in with
true.
Those.
Oh no, see, I disagree. I think it can really, really mix. Anyway, and I was with my friend who has like food allergies. So it was just stressful.
So you guys
Anyways,
were their favorite customers of the night?
Definitely. And there were these two waitresses who stand over by, I mean, the chef was just like not accommodating. And it was the type of place where you're like, you guys definitely can do it. Like there's nothing, it's fine. There were other things that were problematic. Like they don't allow alcohol. They don't serve alcohol. So you have to like bring your own alcohol and... Yeah, it's just a little bit of like a schleppy restaurant. But then there were two waitresses on staff. They stand next to the cash register and just like watch you eat. And so at one point I like grabbed the jar of Parmesan and I was like trying to get it to come out. And they just started shouting at me like, open the top, take the top off. And it was like so aggressive.
So Jewish.
It was just the funniest thing because it's like they're just hovering watching
it's
your every
like,
move.
It's also like, just go in the back and get me a fucking bowl of parm, dude.
Also like that is like the default approach. It's like, we're not going to fix anything, but we will provide some notes.
We're going to provide some notes. Yeah, exactly. We're going to provide some notes from across the room.
No, I'm at my mom's house and she literally she loves nothing more than being upstairs and yelling at me downstairs and wanting to have a conversation that goes from upstairs to downstairs. And I always say the same thing. I'm too tired. I can't yell a whole conversation. Mm-hmm. I swear if we are in the same room, I can do this.
My mom, when I'm home, my mom does that. She likes to have full conversations.
I feel like Italians, Jews, like what is with the yell talking?
Yell talking, it can be really stressful.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Hell yeah, I can. Anyways,
hell yeah, I can.
That's okay. So I was Carrie at one of those types of restaurants, and it really was the restaurant of my dreams. It was terrible and I loved it.
Well, the best thing about it is you got a lot of material from it.
I mean, did I?
You just did a tight five for Skylar and I and the listeners.
I feel like, yeah, okay. I mean, guys, you know, if you're listening and you have strong feelings, let us know about swapping in salmon for flounder, and if you think that's hard,
I think that's,
or if you think that's weird.
Apparently, it's a hard nyan.
That's weird. Okay.
I'm really into seafood. I love chiapino. I love bouillabaisse. I love like marinaras with seafood, but I think salmon has a sweetness to it, so I think it tastes better with like zippier fish.
Zippier meaning like a white flake?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I really don't like. I don't like mix in white fish very much. It's one of my. It's not my preference.
Like you don't mix it in your coffee.
Yeah, I don't like. I don't wake up and crack open
your cereal.
No.
Yeah, you don't like add it to your tiramisu.
Okay. I do add it to my tiramisu, but that's...
Okay, guys, don't call it mizu, okay?
I know, I just had to.
Okay. No, it was fine when you did it. It just, I felt like it was going to become the way we pronounce it.
Wait, Jamie, at the restaurant,
yeah.
Were you like, I'll have some mozzarella and some bruschetta?
Yeah. No,
did you
initially,
drop bowels there?
Initially, she asked for mozzarella and prosciutto, and they were like, what? And then she had to do mozzarella.
They go, oh, you mean cheese and ham? Yeah, we got that. Vinny! Vinny, get her some cheese and ham.
That was a really East Coast story. That was a story that could not have been told on the West Coast.
I totally agree. I mean, the look of it was just, it was just, it was so good. It was
I hope
really
you were wearing sequins and like a top, like a,
God,
like a,
I wish.
Like a dress that has like a heart chest shape.
I mean, that was definitely that outfit was in my soul. I was carrying it with me in my heart and soul last night, but I was not wearing that. But yeah, it was just a ridiculous restaurant. Anyway, yeah. Wait, Skylar, question.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying you don't like fish if you have a mixed seafood, like clams, mussels,
yes,
calamari. You don't want fish at all. You just want those.
In my experience, yeah, I don't love the flaky white fish inclusion in like my calamari mix.
Yeah,
I love all
yeah.
the other parts,
yeah,
but I think that fish in that mix is always the weakest of the mix.
Sure. Yeah, in the words of The Offspring, you got to keep them separated.
100%.
Oh!
100%.
I am going to say, I agree with that. I think fish is only delicious when it's raw. I don't really like it cooked that much.
There's some cooked fish I eat. I love a seared ahi.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Guys, tune in to
Fish Talk.
Fish Talk?
Yeah.
To Fish Chat.
That's what we're pivoting to. We're just going to rate fish.
Fish kebabs.
Yeah. And we have on guests, and they start by telling us their favorite fish, or if they hate
Jew
fish.
Fish. It's two Jews talking fish.
I wonder if that's a good idea or fully the worst idea.
I think it might be kind of good.
It'd be kind of fun with a certain type of person who's like, yeah, let's talk fish.
It'd be funny if we did a limited series.
Yeah, we're just talking fish
like,
for 8 weeks.
We're doing just 10 episodes about fish.
It's three episodes. One salmon, one flounder, and then the third... Who knows?
Mix.
Yeah, a little mix, a little poo-poo platter.
Yeah. Wow. Great ideas all around, you guys. Okay, Rose, who were you this week?
Well, first of all, I have to apologize to my esteemed friends and colleagues. I've like yawned like six times. I'm having a hell of a time having a normal sleep these days.
Ooh.
I don't know who I was. I think I'm a Carrie. I'm a Carrie, like end of season six Carrie, because like a lot of things are happening right now. Our podcast is about to end. I mean, in the current iteration, we will do the movies and then it's going to spin off into something else. But, you know, this big, beautiful project that we've done for a couple of years now is winding down. I'm in this amazing writing fellowship that is also winding down, which is great. Staffing's coming. We're all just going to staff. But, so that thing that, you know, I feel like maybe I'm being Pollyanna here, but I think COVID is winding down. I just think there's a lot of change in the air.
No, there is. I agree. I think it's overwhelming.
Yeah. And it's kind of like interesting, too. I was thinking about it the other day. I think there's a lot of time, more time to be existential now than there ever was. And not even in a bad way, but I just think. The whole world has never been closed before. This is the first time in our lifetime where the world was like, they just turned the sign to closed. And you're like, okay, cool. Just like go take walks and like read books and like think a lot. And I've just in like sort of a contemplative mood where it's like, we've all been like, oh my God, the world's going to open up. And that's so great. And it is great, but it's also kind of, I guess I'm just thinking like, well, what does make my life more meaningful? Is it like going into places and purchasing things or like spending a lot of money on food? Like, is that going to make a huge difference in like feeling like meaningful about life? I don't think so. So I think it's just like trying my best to integrate this year and like my values and like what actually matters to me, which is mostly spending time with people I love and care about and like developing close relationships and making work. And then I think like great meals can be involved and vacations and all that stuff. But I don't think that that makes you any less lonely than anything else in a weird way.
No. And I think I definitely feel you on like, I feel the change happening. It's like pervasive and it's hard to not think about what our lives are supposed to look like or how we're supposed to reintegrate the old ways into the new ways and like I just combine think that, those two things.
Yeah, like I think, you know, you don't really want to just be sitting in your house all the time. I don't think that's the recipe for happiness.
No.
But I also think, oppositely, I think we all were really able to just, whatever, you know, life is a distraction. It's like, if you don't have distractions, then you would just stare at a wall and want to die. Like, doing little stupid stuff like doing our Pilates or Peloton or watching a movie or going to the mall, like,
or even like running an errand. Yeah.
Right. It's all like, well, what's not a distraction? Like just meditating. I mean, you can't just be in this like deep philosophical mood at all times. But I do think that as a society, we put this giant like, wow, it's been a really hard, lonely year for many people. But when things open, everything's going to be better. And it's just kind of like, well, why and how would that be so? I don't know. I think I'm just contemplative.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I'm also I don't know what's going on with me, but like I am not sleeping. So I'm
really,
yeah.
How long has that been going on?
I've been taking sleeping pills for like months, which has been fine. But the last couple of weeks, like even with my sleeping pill, I feel like I'm really anxious and agitated at night. And so, yeah, I hope that gets under control.
Yeah. Are you getting any sleep or is it like you fall asleep for a while and then you wake up and then you go back to like, what is it, just restless sleep or is it like you can't fall asleep?
I have anxiety around sleeping. And even after I take like a half a sleeping pill, I still am up, which makes me anxious because I'm like, why aren't I sleeping? I just took a pill.
Sure, sure.
Then at some point I sleep and then I wake up like incredibly groggy between like 11 a.m. and 1. Like it's just.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's kind of bad. So I don't know. I don't know how I'm going to fix that, but that's definitely a goal of mine. Yeah, it almost feels like part of this spiritual growth of like, okay, the back pain's kind of gone. The world's opening up. Program's ending and I'm going to staff. And there's like one last vestige of like PTSD from last year. And it's just not sleeping,
sure.
I guess.
Sure. Yeah, maybe it's like grief. Sort of like rearing.
I think that's it's possibly for sure. And I think I also have a lot of subconscious anxiety that I'm not like daily aware of, but then just like explodes at night.
Yeah,
totally.
I get that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, cool. I'll just like relax and read. My brain's like, da, 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 da. I'm like, cool.
It's like, what if we think about everything?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, Rose, have you thought of the fact that life is just a slow march to death? And I'm like, oh, I'm tired.
I hadn't before you brought that up. Yes.
Yeah. So anyway,
thank you
for
bringing it to my attention.
I'm happy to be with you guys and I'm going to try and bring it as best I can.
Okay. You're doing great. And
thank you.
This episode is great. And this podcast is great. Has been great. Today we are talking, oh God, we are doing season 6, episode 20. It's called An American Girl in Paris, Part Deux. Which is French for two.
It's crazy to say this, but the final episode of Sex and the City kicks off with Carrie meeting Juliet, Alexander's ex, for lunch. Alexander's supposed to meet them too, but he ends up not making it yet again. He's being flaky McFlakerson. Juliet works with accessories and says she loves Carrie's handbag, while Carrie loves the restaurant, which Juliet's less into. It's gone downhill. It's also very interesting because I think that they're showing something kind of chic, which is like in France, it's just not that dramatic to meet your ex-husband's current lover. Like,
yeah.
She's not rattled at all. And something that kind of haunts Carrie later is that Juliet keeps saying like, the reason that it didn't work out with her and Alexander is she felt like she had to be a groupie and like drop all her own things. But she's so glad to see that he's changed and that Carrie's like her own independent working woman. And you can see that Carrie in her own mind is like,
Yeah, you can also see how disenchanted Alexander and his daughter and his ex-wife, they're all just like completely over the beauty of Paris in this sort of drab, just, yeah, they're just over it. They don't, they are not enchanted at all with it. They don't think it's that beautiful. They're just kind of like blasé about all the things that Carrie loves. Like, she's just like, oh my God, like she's has such a flair for the aesthetic. Being in France for her is like, everything is beautiful. His restaurant's beautiful. The Eiffel Tower is beautiful. The streets are beautiful. And it's like, yeah, every time she's with Alexander's people, they just like won't give her that. They're just like bored or something.
Yeah, she's kind of like the bright-eyed, bushy-tailed American, and they're just kind of like the low-key French. But it's also kind of like, we live here. She's like, wow, she's kind of acting like a tourist. Like, oh my God, yeah, it's so cool, true. You know?
Right. Okay, well, back in New York, Charlotte and Anthony are in Chanel, and they're walking around having a little chat. And Charlotte is prepping for meeting the couple Charlotte and Harry are going to adopt from. So as Charlotte and Anthony browse the store, Anthony has a really sincere moment. Will Charlotte still keep him in her life after the baby comes? Charlotte assures him he is family.
And Samantha and Smith both get their hair bleached at a salon. As they get dressed afterwards, they have some tough words. Smith started seeing a therapist after Samantha's cancer diagnosis, and they haven't been having sex. It's a real role reversal for Samantha. And she refuses to talk about it, and she's just totally ignoring it. And things are getting tense between them.
But back in Paris, Juliet is surprised that Carrie is still a writer. Alexander was not okay with his ex-wife's ambitions when they were together. And who knows, maybe he's changed. They share cigarettes and agree. Maybe he has. Afterwards, Carrie catches up with Alexander. He says Juliet was impressed by Carrie and then heads back to the museum. Carrie kills some more time, walking, eating pastries, stepping in dog shit. She doesn't have much going on. She even goes to sleep alone later.
I just have to say, I've only been to Paris once, and the food was so good that I ate like 11 meals in one day. Like, I just would like go get a pastry, and then I would go get a baguette. And then all of a sudden, I was at a dance club dancing, and I was like, oh no. And I just ran outside and threw up just because the food is so psycho good there. So I just love that Carrie's just like ordering pastries and stuffing herself, because you kind of have to like get a grip on yourself if you're a food person in Paris.
Oh, definitely.
It's also so famously rich that it can really sneak up on you, like making you sick in that way, where it's like everything has so much butter in it.
Yeah, I was like freaking on the dance floor, and then I was like, I don't feel so good.
I want to see you freaking on the dance floor. Also, I love when she feeds the pastry to the dog. That dog was really cute.
The dog is very cute.
I know, I love that beautiful scene.
An enormous dog.
Such a beautiful scene.
Just hanging out.
Yeah, he was. He was massive. Yeah, I loved him.
So over in Brooklyn, Steve has dinner with Miranda and his mom. Oh my God, this storyline is so emotional.
It's kind of the storyline.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So Steve has dinner with Miranda and his mom, Mary. When Steve is noticing something seems off, Mary's disoriented. She keeps calling Brady Stevie, and she doesn't even recognize Miranda. Steve takes her to the emergency room to get her checked out. Samantha and Smith, meanwhile, prep for Smith's next movie shoot at her place.
If it's a movie about Attila the Hun, why are they filming in Canada?
Cheaper.
Oh.
And it's pretty much just open space, which means nowhere to go and nothing to do for the next 8 weeks.
Listen to me. The operative word being listen. I want you to feel free to have sex while you're on location.
Are we here again? After everything?
No, we are not here again. I'm not trying to push you away. I'm trying to keep you. If anyone knows how important sex is to a person, it's me. Correction, was me.
It's the chemo. Your body just needs time to heal itself. It'll be back. It's like winter. Just because the trees are bare doesn't mean they're dead. Along comes spring and bam.
Love Smith. I want you to have sex.
I love his delivery.
I'm serious. I know what we have. Sex is just sex. I understand that.
I don't want to just have sex.
You say that now. But when you're riding a horse all day, wearing animal fur, and you see some sexy Canadian extra in a slave girl outfit, feel free to pillage her.
Samantha.
Don't be so provincial. You're playing a barbarian, for fuck's sake.
I mean, we don't talk about it a lot. It's almost because... It's almost like Smith is a bit of a cartoon fantasy because he's so quote-unquote hot, but then he's equally nice. Like, there's not a bone in his body.
Nice and also devoted to monogamy. Like, he does not have any interest in fucking other people. Like, she's literally pushing him to, and he's like, I don't want to just have sex. Like, he needs the emotional connection. It's important to him.
I think you really hit the nail on the head with the devoted. He's extremely committed and devoted. And to me, he actually, even though I just said he seems like a fantasy cartoon, which he does, he was created to be like that. But I actually know a guy like that. I remember years ago when I moved to LA, I met this girl who's a fashion designer and her husband. And the girl's pretty. No, definitely attractive. But her husband is like ridiculously hot. And is definitely the kind of person that gets hit on multiple times a day. And he is like, it's just doesn't even, he is like completely in love and devoted and committed. And would you could trust him in any situation. Wow. He kind of reminds me of Smith.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking, I wonder, I was going to maybe have some kind of theory, but I don't know that I do necessarily. Like, I wonder, I think there are those guys that are like, I'm thinking of actors in particular. Isn't Ryan Gosling married?
Yeah, to Eva Mendes. Yeah.
Have they been together? Have they been together a while?
They've got a bunch of kids or something. A couple.
That's what I... Okay. I might not know their whole deal, but I kind of have that impression of Ryan Gosling. Obviously, Eva Mendes is beautiful. But I'm just saying, like, I kind of have that vibe.
He seems like a family man.
A bit of a Smith. I think he's a bit of a Smith. I think he's like, he could literally...
I can buy that.
...have sex with anyone he wanted at any time. And, like, I think he's just kind of like, I only have eyes for you. Like, I just think that...
No, thank you.
I mean, those types obviously do exist. But it's like, it's very romantic.
Yeah, my dad is like that with my stepmom.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they totally exist and they're real.
Yeah, I think it's actually maybe, I'm starting to think that it's actually more of a male quality. And I think women, I know I have like projected onto men that they're the ones who like can't focus on one person and like monogamy's a drag to them. I actually don't think that. Like most of the guys I know are kind of like looking for the one.
I think what you're saying is really interesting in regard to this specific scene, because I get the sense watching the scene that
that's kind of what Samantha's doing.
Yes, but that's exactly what Samantha's doing.
My God.
She wants Smith to sort of have sex and have the fulfillment that is not currently like part of their relationship. But I think that comes from her anxiety and her feeling that it's not currently part of their relationship more so than it comes from his feeling that there's that lacking in there. Dynamic at the moment.
It's actually kind of sweet in a way. I know that it's coming from Samantha's insecurities for sure. Because I think Samantha's treating the situation, I think she's looking at Smith as if he was her. Like, if she was in a relationship like that,
of course,
then she would want someone to say that to her. But I don't think that Smith is as sex obsessed as she is. Like, there's also couples with different libido levels and like, I think Samantha has a very high libido and like in their relationship, they really enjoy sex together. But I would be very surprised if Smith is as in need of it as Samantha. So I think she is also projecting like, oh, if I were in this situation, I would definitely need you to do this. So I'm going to offer this to you. And I don't even think he's a really good, dedicated guy. I also don't think he is somebody who has a sex addiction like she does. I don't think he has an insatiable. I don't think he's the kind of person where it's like 8 weeks without sex, I'll die. Like,
yeah, it's not a sign to him that the relationship is broken if like there's a spell where sex isn't happening in the same way.
I also think, though, they have such an open and honest communication that even her just saying that like, hey, you can have sex with people, like there is something kind of beautiful about that element of the relationship. Like he doesn't even want to take her up on it. And it's like, I don't know. There's just something like, there's something kind of sweet about her being like, you can go have sex with people because
I think it shows how secure they are.
Absolutely. And I think it's like really endearing. And like, it's also just like people love free will And if you're in a relationship where you can have those kinds of conversations, I think in, at least if you're mostly monogamous, I think you're like, yeah, I'm not going to, I don't want to do that. Like the fact that you're even offering it up makes me not, I don't need it because I don't feel
like suffocated.
I'm imprisoned. Yeah. I'm not imprisoned by this relationship. So yeah, free will's great.
Yeah. And I think it's a testament to how secure they are in their relationship. And I also don't think it's an unreasonable thing to say. I think it's totally reasonable.
No.
I think if you were in a relationship and you were like, something has happened in my physical health. My interest in sex has nosedived. I don't know if I'll get it back. I love you. You may not be there. I feel comfortable with you having that with other people. I actually think that's like creative problem solving, honestly.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah, I think it says a lot about their relationship and it says a lot about her security in the relationship. And it honestly says a lot about how much she values Smith. Like she says she's trying to keep him.
Yeah, so, I think it's romantic. I agree with you. I think it's really romantic. And I think it's a sign of a really strong relationship. I think the only thing that's a misfire from her that she's not trying to do is I think Smith is a really romantic, committed guy. And so even though she's literally doing it out of love, her and Smith have very different personalities and POVs. And so she's doing it thinking, oh, this would be so nice if somebody did this for me. He feels like, oh, wow, my partner doesn't even care. Like, it's hurtful to him. He's somebody that's like, I want you to be jealous. I don't want you to think this. I think he thinks of it as like hurtful that you would even think that I, you know, they come from different places. So it's a generous and thoughtful and considerate offer. But I don't think he reads it that way. I think he reads it like, do you think I don't love you? Do you think
that's interesting.
And that I think it's, again, back to that point of like, I think it's definitely coming from Samantha's own insecurities in a lot of ways, where it's like in the wanting to keep him by giving him this freedom to go sleep around. It's an expression that like there's a risk that if she doesn't give him that freedom, then she would lose him. Like that must be what the thinking is to make the offer.
Yeah. There's also something like with Smith and Smith being so hot.
Yeah.
That I think that there's a little bit of like he truly could have sex with as many people as he wants. And I think that almost that type of person, I could see doubling down the other way and being like, I could have it so I don't need it. Like it's there. It's there. If he wants to fuck people, he's so good looking. He can get whoever he wants. Before Samantha, he could get whoever he wanted. All these women were throwing themselves at him at that stupid grass restaurant. And like, I think that he kind of has an embarrassment of riches. And because of that, he's just like, he's actually very good at monogamy because the option of whatever he wants is there.
He's a quality over quantity guy.
Yes.
I think off your point, Jamie, which I think is really well made, is that I think he's also probably really grossed out by being objectified. Like he's objectified constantly.
That's very interesting. And I think you're saying it better. That's like the better version. That is what I was trying to say. I think true.
It's also like people wanting to have sex with him. It's less of like, oh, this thing I want that we should do together, this collaboration, and more like, I want to get
one-sided.
You.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I want to like,
and like also feeling like entitled to his looks in a way. Like,
yeah. And just not being interested in anything that's like, and I think that there are men like that. I think probably that guy that I was talking about too, where they're just like, it's gross. It's like, oh yeah, you just like, it's like someone being rich and having people just like you for that. It's like, it's transparent and gross.
I think that's really, really astute.
Yeah. So now that we're kind of like at the end of the show, do you guys think that, I mean, just to have like a free form, like just riff conversation, do you guys think that Samantha is a sex addict, or do you think she's just a woman who really has a really healthy, you know, healthy, no shame relationship to have sex, and she just has a high libido? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
My gut instinct is high libido.
That's cool.
I hadn't really thought about sex addict, mostly because I don't think I know anyone who's a sex addict. So I don't know the qualities of it. Like, I wouldn't know what to look for. So, yeah.
My read is more so that there's a, I don't know if sex addict is exactly how I would phrase it, but she definitely seems to have a tricky relationship with sex, where she's really, really open and pro sleeping with a lot of people and all that. And like, but she also like acts out sexually. Like, remember when she cheated on Smith with Richard, and like, she does things that she regrets sexually as well. So I don't know if that's totally a product of sex addiction so much so as it is a product of, again, a tricky relationship with her sexuality in some ways.
Yeah, she definitely has a tricky relationship with it. But I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if that an addict makes.
Well, I think an addict is somebody who's not in control of their behavior and feels like,
yeah,
like something's taking over their life and like ruining relationships and ruining their finances and like they're not able to execute. And I think that you could make the argument either way with Samantha, and it may be a mix. I think that there's a lot of amazing things about her relationship to sex. I think she is so body positive and sex positive and pleasure positive, which is very radical and revolutionary for a woman. And I think that's all really amazing. I do think there were moments in the show, just like you had said, Skylar, about like she literally cheats on the guy who's treated her the best ever.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
And also her insistence, absolute insistence in like really only wanting men in this one way, that I think it's interesting. I mean, it's kind of
really quick, though. She cheated on him with the person who fucked her over, which I do think is like noteworthy. I don't think she was just like,
she had
hangups with him. So
no, totally. You're
right. It was more loaded.
You're right.
Yeah. Just to say like, yeah, I think that that is a more complicated relationship than just cheating on him.
You're totally right. But it's also just interesting that this character who has maintained very consistently through six seasons, like, I like living my life. I don't want kids. I don't want a husband. I'm very happy. I really enjoy men and I'm a hedonist and that's great. And then she ends up with Smith. So like, is it that people just want different things at different times and she just grew and changed? Or was she like lying to herself? Like, I don't know.
To me, I want to believe almost as like a hopeless romantic that like that relationship services her in the right ways, in that like, she can have amazing sex with him. They're so open. They're so communicative. They're fully on the same page. There's also a freedom there. He doesn't suffocate her. She doesn't suffocate him. I think that if you can do that, I do think monogamy is attractive, but I do think it's delicate and you really have to work at making monogamy work for you, because I don't think monogamy is inherently easy.
No, definitely not. I don't think a real working relationship, whether it's poly, open, or monogamous, is easy, period. I think something real is not easy.
It all takes work, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. My take on Samantha, I think, is that at the time, she was being real with herself. I don't think she was like pretending not to want to be in a relationship, but she did. I think she was really happy with the way she was living.
Yeah, I don't think she had the right relationship. I think he was the right relationship.
Well, I also think that, like, what you want, what I wanted 10 years ago isn't what I want now. What I want 10 years from now will also be different. Like, she's also aging. She's in her middle age. And like, not to say that like things go a certain way, but I think cancer has come into her life. I think her libido is different. Her needs are different. And so the Samantha of season one is not the Samantha of season six. Like,
yes, definitely. I don't know that I felt like her philosophy changed. I feel like Smith changed her. Like, I think that's romantic, but I also do think it's like relationship specific. I mean maybe cancer could have changed it. I felt like it was more the relationship, and like
romantic.
He proved a different level once the cancer came into the equation. But I do think that this relationship gave her the freedom to be herself while being committed to someone.
I love that, Jamie. I think that's really beautiful. It's kind of like, maybe the reason that she never wanted to be in a relationship is she could never imagine a guy accepting her full
self. And I think he fully gets her. He's not trying to change her. Even when she was like being kind of a dick to him, like in the beginning, he was just like, I'm on board. I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah, when she didn't know his name for like four episodes.
Yeah, he like thought it was kind of funny and like weird and cute. I don't know. Like, I think that they're just like very meant for each other. And that's why she can say like, go fuck people.
I love that.
That's why he doesn't want to. He's like, it's not what I need.
I kind of like it, because it's like, she's exactly the opposite of Charlotte. It's like, she didn't need a relationship to fulfill her. It wasn't what she was looking for.
Right.
But she's an open-minded enough person that when somebody fantastic came along, she was open to the possibility.
Right, right. Well, it just worked. It seemed to work for her, which I think she's not easy to please in that way because she's so, like, hyper-independent. But it seemed to be – it allowed her to be independent even though she's with someone is sort of the feeling I got. Okay, so getting back into it. Steve gets his mom back home from the hospital a few hours later. She had a small stroke. Steve and Miranda head to Mary's place to get her nightgown so she can stay over. What they find is a total mess. There are dishes piled up. There are bugs in the sink. It is really rough. Steve wants to hire a nurse for his mom, but Miranda doesn't think that is the move. She thinks that Steve's mom should just come live with them.
I mean, tears and crying.
It's incredible. I
mean, it's so funny. Like, this show was about, like, sex, dating, and romance, but then it's such a beautiful evolution to where it's like, you know, when you're in your 20s, you're like, oh, romance is like a really hot guy with a lot of tattoos who, like, listens to cool. I mean, I'm obviously being extremely specific. Jamie's like, no, not exactly. But for me, it was like somebody with, like, cool style and who, like, knew about cool movies and was super smart and kind of a jerk, taking me to a really good restaurant and us having, like, a really friction filled conversation about opinions and then going home and having sex. And then it's like, oh no, you know what romance is? It's being in this disgusting hoarder house and your partner being like, your mother is my mother and we will do anything we can to take care of her. And it's like, oh, that's what it is. That's actually what love is. It's not like having the perfect body or having the perfect this. It's literally family. It's being your family.
Well, it's also like when you love someone the way, like, Miranda and Steve love each other, I think it's like, yeah, you are me. Like, what? Of course you can come live. Like, it's just interesting too, because Miranda's such, I feel like Miranda is similar to Samantha in that, like, she really likes things her way. She's successful. She's kind of doesn't have a lot of time for people, it seems. And, like, the way she has sort of learned to, I don't know the word I'm looking for. Like, the way she has been domesticated, I don't think that's what I mean, but, like, the way she is, like, that's settled amazing into being a wife and living in Brooklyn and having a baby, like, she's kind of, like, primed for this situation. It's like now she's kind of seeing the value of, like, having a partnership, and, like, this is a perfect test to a partnership is, like, how do we handle this situation? And they just, like, handle it so beautifully.
Yeah, I think another thing you're sort of pointing at that's important to note is that I would say Samantha and actually probably all of them, these are extremely self-centered women and self-obsessed women and stubborn women who are very sure about what they like. And they're not really that open to changing. And so, you know, getting into a partnership in your mid, late 30s, like these characters are, or early 40s, like Samantha, it's like, you're pretty set in your ways. You know what you like. You have your schedule, and, like, accommodating for a whole nother person is a big deal. And it's incredible to see these people do that because love is worth it to them, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's the best.
Okay, so Carrie does some more browsing, and this time at a bookshop. She finds the French edition of her book, and she also finds some fans. The salespeople can't believe she's the Carrie Bradshaw, and they insist on throwing her a party that Saturday. It's the first time Carrie actually feels like herself since coming to France. Carrie really wants Alexander to come, but of course he can't. Well, at least Carrie has her own thing to do, finally.
Then back in New York, Charlotte and Harry have their meeting with the adoptive parents. It does not go great. The parents reveal they are having a girl and that they've been thinking about names. So Charlotte and Harry are not getting their baby. That was terrifying because they were like,
so sad.
Yeah, it was just horrible. Not terrifying. It was just terrible. I meant to say terrible. Because that does happen. I have a friend who trying to adopt. Yeah. And then they just, like, they actually ghosted her. Like, she couldn't even get a hold of them because they decided to keep the baby. Anyways. So later, Harry starts to write their lawyer an angry email, but Charlotte talks him down. That just was not their baby. Their baby will come.
Also, just in case anybody used to watch Roseanne, that was one of the Darlenes from Roseanne that played one of the adopted
parents.
Second Becky. Yeah, it was Second Becky. Yeah, this is just a very beautiful scene because it's
Was Second Becky or First Becky?
I don't remember.
But it's just a really beautiful scene because we see before, like in that Anthony Charlotte scene, like she's pulling out all the stops. She's trying to like look perfect. She's going through all this stuff. It's like her heart is so on the line. And then it's just a really heart-wrenching scene where she can just see that like it's just not going to happen for her, you know?
Yeah, I think it was first Becky, just to clarify. I do think it was first Becky.
Over at Samantha's office, she has a surprise. Smith got her flowers, only he didn't get her a big bouquet. They'll bloom in spring when he's back. He got her like, looks like some tulip plants that she would plant. And it's just like this beautiful metaphor of like, things will grow. They just need time and nourishment.
Right, they're in the winter right now.
Yeah. And he got her like bulbs that will eventually blossom, which is what Samantha will do when she gets on the other end of her chemo. So Samantha calls him to say thanks. And just in case he hasn't yet, to maybe not sleep with anyone after all. And it's just what he wanted to hear all along. So romantic.
Ugh, I loved it. Back in Paris, Carrie gets ready for her party. But just as she's about to leave, she finds Alexander having an anxiety attack. The pressure of finally showing his work to the museum higher-ups is just too much to bear. Carrie tries to calm him down, so he asks her to ditch her party to hold his hand at this gallery function. Carrie reluctantly agrees, but when they get to the museum, the curator greets Alexander with applause and says he's a genius, and then he drops Carrie's hand because he didn't really need her after all.
I mean, the second he asks her to not do her party, to go with him, I'm like, no!
I know. It's really hard to watch.
It should feel like you're screaming in an echoey hallway. It's like, no, Carrie, no. And then, you know, great directing. I mean, you could say it's schmaltzy or over the top, but it's almost like a slow-mo when he releases her hand and he walks into, like, the sea of adoring fans. And she's like...
She's like, wait, I had adoring fans and I... came here with you.
Which is why I really like think this episode is so cool, because I love the nugget that we get at the beginning of the episode where she sits down with the ex-wife and the ex-wife is like, yeah, I couldn't do it. I couldn't just be your cheerleader. I felt invisible. He was not supportive. And Carrie's like telling herself like, oh, that sounds so shitty. Well, he's different. And then it's just like people don't change that much, you know?
Yeah. And I also, yeah, I love how they planted that. And then I love that we get to see it pay off in their relationship finally.
Exactly. And it's cool because it's like, it's, you know, I think it was sophisticated to show his ex-wife being this like poised, elegant, chic, beautiful woman who's not bitter at all. She's completely moved on. She's like happy for both of them. She's just giving her two cents, which is like, this didn't work out for me. I'm so glad it's working out for you. You know, the American version would be like, get your hands off my man. Like, you know, cheesy.
Right.
So back in Brooklyn, Miranda's getting the hang of life with Mary. This is a really great twist to this episode. And Charlotte stops by. And it's so interesting to see the girls getting together without Carrie. It's like, oh, yeah, our best friend lives in Europe. So now it's like Carrie and Charlotte and Miranda are hanging out.
Yeah, I know. I love that.
It's cute. So Charlotte stops by. And while they're talking, Mary asks Miranda if she can take little baby Stevie to the zoo. Miranda corrects her. It's not Stevie, it's Brady. And no, she can't take him. Miranda and Charlotte go back to talking, but Mary sneaks out of the house anyway. As soon as Miranda realizes she's gone, she bolts out to find her, leaving Brady with Charlotte.
And Carrie sits around the museum waiting for Alexander. As she does, she notices a hole in the lining of her Dior bag. Her Carrie necklace isn't lost after all. It is in the hole in her bag. She wants to tell Alexander, but he's busy, so she decides to ditch him and try to make her party. While she searches for a cab, Big just misses her. That's right. He is in Paris looking for Carrie. When she finally makes it to the party, it's unfortunate, but she is too late. Everybody went home.
That little rundown that you just gave Jamie is just a nugget of so much good writing.
I know.
Like using the necklace prop to, I've said this before in other episodes, but I just really love in television or any movie or any visual medium when you can just see something and we know exactly what it means. She finds the necklace that says Carrie. She's like finding her old New York self. She's remembering who she is. You don't have to say that in a bunch of dialogue. She just finds the necklace. That's it.
Right. And it's also, it's like, her old self isn't gone. It was just lost for a little bit.
Yeah, perfect. And then, of course, I just am such a fan of the like ships passing in the night. And
oh, me too.
It creates tension and you just can't wait for whenever it is that they get together. And then finally, Miranda finds Mary. She's eating a slice of pizza from the trash, but otherwise she's in one piece. Miranda gets her home and gives her a bath, mm-hmm. which is just like the most beautiful.
Oh my God.
Tender. It's just like, this is life. Oh. This is the stuff of life. And and Magda looks on at Miranda, and it's in Magda's eyes, you just see like so much pride and joy at just seeing that the ways that this Miranda person who she used to like work for and see.
It's the growth. Yeah.
You know, she used to work for her and see random dildos and cat food and Chinese food. And now she has like a human with like a, I'm hesitating to say a whole life. Cause it's not like Miranda didn't have a life before, but it's just different. It's just different. And Carrie meanwhile catches up with Alexander.
How could you just abandon me like that when I gave up my party to be with you?
I didn't abandon you.
I sat on a bench alone in a museum.
Let's not do this now. I'm tired. I had a stressful day.
I'm in this relationship too. I am a person in this relationship. Have you any idea what it's been like for me here? Eating alone and waiting for my boyfriend who would rather spend time with a light installation?
That's what
I
do.
That she digs at
his
arm.
That's where I am. You always knew this.
I had a life in New York. I had a job and friends, and I didn't give all of that up to come here and wander the streets of Paris alone.
Okay, I'm taking a shower and I'm going to bed. And we'll talk more as soon as you
No, 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 not as soon as.
Please, Carrie. It was an accident. I didn't mean to.
No, oh, my necklace. Oh.
I'm so sorry. I thought I was clear all along about who I am.
Well, maybe it's time to be clear about who I am. I am someone who is looking for love. Real love. Ridiculous, inconvenient, consuming, can't live without each other love. And I don't think that love is here in... in this expensive suite, in this lovely hotel in Paris. It's not your fault, it's my fault. I shouldn't have come here.
Carrie.
Please, don't. I'm fine.
She's such a good actress. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think television and comedies and sitcoms and half hours like aren't considered art or whatever, but she's an amazing, amazing performer. Like, stack her up against anyone. I think she's really amazing.
Yeah.
She's very good.
That feels like a play. You could have seen a play scene. And it would have been like a beautiful moment and like an incredible play.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm wondering, what do you think the slap was about in terms of writing that in?
I love that because it's so ambiguous.
Yeah, it is ambiguous.
Which is really cool.
It is cool, right?
Yeah.
I just wondered if you didn't think it was ambiguous. I've always found it to be.
I think it's incredibly ambiguous, which I think is really clever because the writers are like, let's add this thing in that can be interpreted millions of ways. I think the Rose Cerno interpretation, what I'm going to choose to interpret it as, is that this relationship eventually would turn physical, is what I'm interpreting it as.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Like eventually they'd get into blowouts and he would smack her and this would just be part of it. Yeah.
But it was an accident. But
was it? I mean, how do you know? He said it was an accident.
It also does always feel like, at least in, I don't have much experience with actual patterns of abuse, but at least in movies and television, yeah, it does seem, at least in movies and television, what you're saying, Rose, like that's definitely what is more typically what happens. Like it starts with this and it's just a slide down into worse places.
I just think, why else would you put it in? Then there's literally, there's no reason to put it in.
No, you're right. I mean, it just really did look accidental. It looked like his, he like accidentally like lifted his arm wrong. And like literally it was, I'm not, this is not me like defending people who are physically abusive. In this case,
Jamie
has
slapped me many times. Every time we get in a fight.
She says it's an accident. Yeah.
I'm like, Jamie, it can't be an accident five times in a row.
I have a twitch. But I just, I mean, it really did look like an accident. So I guess I was just like, oh, like, wow, what was the point of putting that in? I'm not saying there wasn't a point. I like it. And I think it's really interesting because we're able to talk about
it. Yeah, it gives it some bite.
I also think that it is a literal, like it's as much of a breaking point as like you could have without something more extreme, I suppose. Like this is their breakup. He's literally crossing. We found a line for where this relationship really must come to an end. And it's
that's a nice
physical
way to put
beat.
It. It's like the last straw.
I also was in a relationship. I actually had it in two relationships where I was with like someone who was kind of heavy handed and like would accidentally like elbow me or like. Just like even when like they
always
like,
accidental, always an accident.
Yes, fully an accident. Like truly, just like didn't
big
like,
guys
know
with
their
no body awareness. Yeah.
Yes, and like, and I'd be like, "Ow!" And then they were just like, "Oh, I'm so sorry." And you're just like, it does. Even when it's an accident, there is this feeling of like, start being aware of me. Like, start being aware of your body so you can be aware of me because I'm still getting elbowed here, or I'm still getting like.
I will
say that is not comfortable.
I think that makes a ton of sense, but Alexander Petrovsky is like 5'6" in heels and weighs like a cool 100 pounds. So like, I think that he's not like this lumbering guy.
I had it with someone who wasn't lumbering. I had a lumbering and then I had a non-lumbering.
I also have to give some props to Alexander Petrovsky. He's an insufferable character, but I think he's a great actor because like, he really is playing this character perfectly. And like,
I have no notes for him.
Yeah, neither do I. And I think he's just like the whole, he really is preying upon this diabolical female trait of like, oh no, someone needs me. I have to help them, even if they have not been helping me at all. Oh, it's like all you have to do for most women is be like, kind of sad and I'm having a bad day, and any woman will be like, oh my god, like she'll be like bleeding from her eyes and she'll just stop and
she's
help
like,
you.
Can I make you a manicotti? It's very like
it's really manipulative. And
and
so I think the slap is, I think he's like, he's one of the most, I think his type is like the most insidious macho type, where it's like, oh look, he's an artist and he's refined and he's cultured.
Super interesting.
And he's European and he doesn't raise his voice.
Most insidious. Yes.
But at the same time, he's like deeply macho and sexist and deeply does not believe that anything she's doing is nearly as important as him. He never does it. And that's why I feel like the slap is like part of that kind of behavior. Is like, you're a child. I'm an adult. Like, get in line. Like,
yeah, it's one of those things where even if, to your earlier point, Rose, even if he never hit her again, there's always the threat that he would, because he's kind of it's sort of a boiling rage underneath the surface with him a little
bit. That I love that assessment.
I feel like he's the kind of person that in the future, if they had been together for like another year and she's like crying and begging him to come with her to something, he would be like, you're embarrassing yourself. Stop crying. You're acting like a child. Like,
definitely. Well, he basically does that here, where he's like, I'm going to take a shower and then I'm going to go to bed. And
yeah.
Like, okay, man.
Like, oh, good impression. Hi, May Lee.
Here. Oh, thank you. I really channeled
Jamie
him.
Amanda.
Okay. Well, getting back into it. After the breakup, Carrie tries to sort out getting her own hotel room. As she haggles with the concierge over details and sifts through her dress to try to find her now broken necklace, Big walks into the hotel. They lock eyes and the mood immediately lifts. Or it does, until Carrie mentions that Alexander slapped her. Big loses his mind at this. He rushes up the stairs to give Alexander a piece of his mind. Carrie's like, no, 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 don't do that. Wait, wait. Carrie's chasing after him. The big means business. So Carrie trips him. They end up sprawled out on the floor. They both fall over. They're sprawled out and they're laughing about the whole thing. They talk outside the hotel later.
Wait, before we do the clip, can I just say?
Please.
It must be such a miraculous feeling. I mean, we're all writers on this, but to write that scene, to be in this room full of writers who've been working on the show for 6 or 7 years now, and they love these characters and they know these characters, and they write this scene where they're like, I hope it works, that it actually ends up being like charming and funny when she trips him. And I hope this like really screwball, like really funny hotel premise works. And then you're standing on set watching your episode and it's just like, not, it doesn't just fucking work. It's like,
it's amazing.
Oh my God.
The way that they crack each other up is just, even just that is so lovely to watch. Like, I really do think that is like the purest manifestation of love, is just like two people like literally injured on the floor, just like dying laughing.
It's amazing.
Okay, let's play the clip.
I gotta hand it to you, kid. Most people come to Paris to fall in love. You came and got slapped.
Why is that funny?
Are you cold?
No, I'm still in shock. This is so surreal. I mean, what? Where? How did you even get here?
It took me a really long time to get here. But I'm here. Carrie, you're the one.
Oh, kiss me, you big crybaby.
It's interesting because there was a part of me that when he says, you're the, wait, I'm so sorry, I'm so spaced out. Did he say you're the one?
Yes. Yeah.
Carrie, you're the one.
Carrie, you're the one. It's really interesting. I actually feel like you can make, I'm having two arguments in my head. One argument is, how fucking romantic is it for somebody who dumped you for like a 20 something model, then got divorced, then they left her, then it's like they've used all their options and then they just turn to you and go, you're the one, I think. Like, there's yeah, there's that part. And then there's another part that goes, but isn't it kind of romantic in a way that like it's easy to just not have any drama and just be like, you're the one and that's it. But is it, there's another part of me that like, is it more romantic that they've just been through hell and back and they just can't get rid of each other because they're supposed to be together?
Yeah. And it's also like, I have similar arguments in my head. And there's also, I would say, a third argument of like, well, we think that the one is just such an easy, quick, attainable feat. But also, maybe that's just what we see on TV. And maybe sometimes, not all the time, I do think that those types of relationships exist as well. But sometimes maybe it does take you a minute to like find your way back to each other.
I think so.
I'm not sure. You know, I think that I think regardless of any of those arguments, I think that it's refreshing to see a relationship that in a lot of ways you could label toxic kind of come back around and like, oh, he actually did learn from it and they're going to give it another chance, yet another chance. Like, there is something just refreshing about how kind of sweet and dysfunctional it is. That I like. I mean, just in terms of writing, I think it's interesting. I don't think it's healthy, but I think it's interesting.
It's really funny that you say that, Jamie, because it just triggered in my mind, like, and with that scene,
1 million American women decided that every time they dated an asshole, they were like, you know what? In 6 years. No. I'm not criticizing what you're saying. I'm just thinking about.
No, I had that thought too, though.
How funny it is where it's like, it's sort of like a hope narrative for women all over the globe who are like, you know what? In 7 years and two cheats,
that's a good point,
and a nervous breakdown and a heart surgery later, this guy might come around to me.
Right. I know it is. That could also be an argument, too, where it's like they had to keep the notion of the one to round this whole thing out. Like, no matter how real they get in other ways and no matter how much they show you sides of Big that are pretty abhorrent, they still can't resist the trope of like the romantic comedy ending, which I do agree with you could be really detrimental. And has probably is. I probably was impacted by it in some way.
I like both sides of it. I mean, it's like we obviously care more about the core four than Big because we never see him without Carrie. And so we only know him in relationship to Carrie. But like there's a world in which you're like, OK, well, Samantha was like a shitty partner who cheated and now she's a really good partner. Can we give him the same grace? Maybe people change. But on the other side, it just reminds me of like
I have a close friend that I love who, in my opinion, has
way too much tolerance for toxic male behavior. Mm. I would say toxic female behavior, too, actually, in friendships as well. But we got into it once when she was telling me about this guy she was dating, and I didn't think that the behavior was on the up and up. And she really clung to this. Well, I know two people who were dating these guys who were totally not committing, and they like gave them an ultimatum and now they're married with kids. And I'm like, this is what people are going to do with the big thing of like, well, listen, in Sex and the City, this guy cheats on her. He falls in love with someone else. And it's just like interesting how like it's the reason this is great art is because you can debate it until the cows come home. And like, maybe there's a world in which they have a really secure, loving relationship. And again, I'm bringing up aging and stuff because I think it does make a difference because like, you know, when your body is working and everything's fine and you have no problems and you're really good looking, and then it's like women are disposable. When you have a fucking heart surgery, it's kind of a wake up call. I mean, I can speak for myself, like health problems are a real wake up call of like what you're really looking for in a person. It really like takes the whole like, I'm just here to have fun to like a different like, oh, no, your romantic partner is your new family. This is your family member. That's what you're actually looking for. I mean, if you want like a real relationship. And I think him and Samantha and Miranda, you know, they spent the first 6 seasons just sitting around talking about like if guys have a receding hairline and how much money they have. And now it's like, yeah, it's not about any of that. Like,
yeah. Yeah. Well, that is, I think that is a commonality with all of them is they've kind of like
they're grown up,
snapped out of. Yeah. They really have like snapped out of some of their bullshit for sure.
Yeah. And it's like maybe there's an argument that like maybe Big has too. Maybe it's about the core five growing up. Like,
yeah.
What were you going to say, Sky?
I was just going to say, I think the show ends in a very, it's interesting how sort of like down on these women ending up single, I think the show kind of ends up being ultimately. Everybody gets coupled up. Like there is a lot of sweet resolution to their coupling ups, but there are also, at least through the course of the 6 seasons, a lot of interesting explorations of them not being in relationships.
That's true.
And so, I mean, I found this episode a little more frustrating, ultimately, for that reason. Well, for that reason, certainly, like...
Which reason?
Carrie ending up with Big again is, like, I found really tough to... Even with, granted, all the romanticism of, like, potentially it's coming from him, like, actually growing up and being serious about her, but I think he's been terrible to her, he's been terrible for her... She's been bad right back to him. I just see this as I was saying to Kristen after I finished the episode that like this episode felt very frustrating to me as a finale because it feels much more so as the sort of thing that's setting up a lot of stuff that I would like to see in future seasons. Like, I want to know what happens with Big and Carrie after this. Yeah. I want to know what happens with Steve, Mary, and Miranda's dynamic now that Mary's living there.
Yeah.
I also want to know, I want to see Charlotte and Harry as kids, as parents.
Me too.
Yes.
And so what I said to Kristen was like, I almost kind of wish that like this show, and it's just not something we really do in American television, but like, I kind of wish this show had like a Richard Linklater treatment where it's like every couple of years we get another season with the core four.
That's
rather
cool.
Than like we do 6 seasons.
And then 30 years later.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's like, there's so much interest because it's a show about life, and which so I think is like what it's. Yeah. And I think that's what's so masterful about it. And this is a frustrating note. It felt to me to leave it on. Yeah.
I think it's interesting. Remind me, you guys, what our excellent guest who had all that inside scoop, was his name Chris?
Chris Collins.
Remind me what Chris said. Did he say something like originally she wasn't supposed to end up with him, but there was some sort of change? Do you guys remember that? Am I making that up?
I don't remember that because he worked early on the show and then was gone and watched the finale like as like a viewer, but he was working on The Sopranos at the time. So I don't know if he would even have been privy to that necessarily.
I mean, you know, I think the reason this show is really tricky, like my sister never watched the show. She thought it was like anti-feminist garbage. And like, there's an argument for that. It's a show about these empowered, fun women, but to be happy, they all have relationships and are either mothers or trying to be mothers or wives, or they finally tame their wild ways and they're in a monogamous partnership. Like the end is as conservative as it gets. I mean, it's kind of saying like, if you're single, it's a problem. And thank God these women got coupled up. Like,
yeah, that's where I landed, which was why I was like, I was frustrated with this episode ultimately.
Yeah, I think the only side of it that I could kind of understand, because I really agree with everything you just said, both of you just said, I think there is something nice about like, oh, it also could be seen as like their journey to finding their person, which I do think is like, there are like four very different examples of that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think on the other side of like arguing against what I just said, most people want to be partnered, and that doesn't make you like a whiny biological little bitch. Yeah, it's like
totally. Yeah, like I think we glorify like being, you know, being alone. And I do think being alone is like very important in many ways, but I also think like
it's also something you can't control. It's sort of like
I do think that way. I think that it's tricky because it's like so much comes out, so much like self growth and self love comes out of being alone. But like, I think that's why I like Smith and Samantha so much, because I'm like, I feel like they're still growing, even though they're absolutely together. Like that relationship feels really like, oh, we're just evolving.
I definitely agree that so much self-growth happens alone, but I also think there's a bunch of growth that you could never do by yourself. Like, I think,
absolutely. I think, totally agree with
that. I think self-sacrifice and compromise, I think people, you just simply cannot be as selfish with a partner as you are alone.
Definitely.
I think for all of us is good. I mean, it's like
good
to learn to share. It's good to learn to think of other things besides yourself. And there's ways to do that without having a partner or having a kid. It's like, if you're super involved in a cause or if you're an activist, it's like caring about things beyond yourself is like, that's like the realm of the spiritual. And that's like the realm of like the soul and stuff.
Absolutely.
So anyway, I'm really deep.
You are really.
You actually are.
Okay. Oh my God. I'm so glad I get to blurb this. Back at Charlotte's, she greets Harry with takeout Chinese, which is just like, oh my God, about something's about to happen. And Harry got something from China too, adoption papers. He shows her a photo and Charlotte knows, with tears streaming down her eyes. She says, that's our baby. And it's just like, ugh. I mean, if you don't have a face full of snot and tears, check your pulse. It's the most beautiful thing. Over in Brooklyn, Magda speaks to Miranda. What Miranda did for Mary, that was love. Magda kisses Miranda on the forehead and leaves for the night, which is also really nice too, because none of these, Miranda's mom dies, I think, in this show.
I love Magda.
Yeah.
So that what you did is love, like, that is like some next level shit.
It's like the thing that's so crazy about TV versus movies is like, it takes a long time. It takes like 90 episodes. It takes 6 seasons, but it's like every single one of those episodes brought us here. Mm. And it was just like, so worth it for us to get here. It's like every storyline is just gorgeous. Mm. And back at Samantha's, Smith comes in. He flew all the way back from Canada to tell her something. He loves her. And I love the way she says it. She said, you've meant more to me than any man I've ever known, which is her I love you, which is absolutely stunning.
And back in New York, Big drops Carrie off at her place, but he still lives in San Francisco, so he can't check into the Four Seasons just yet. So Carrie invites him up to her apartment. The episode and the series closes with Carrie meeting the Core Four for lunch. Harry and Charlotte, walking Elizabeth Taylor and all of her puppies, Miranda, Brady, and Steve eating and laughing, Smith and Samantha having sex again, and Carrie taking a call from Mr. Big, who she now knows his first name is John.
Which is like, come on, guys. You're just going to give us a limp dick little John. No offense to any of the Johns out there.
I'll
but
just keep calling him Big. I don't give a shit.
I mean, yeah. Big is a thousand times more exciting. It's not like his... What do you guys think? Okay, wait. What would be a better name for Big? Vance?
Just a name. Vance. Just a name that... I think it's like
Chris Noth. I think it'd be great.
Yeah.
But just like, if you were writing it, what would the name come up on the phone?
I would love him to be like a David.
David.
I like an Adam. He seemed, or maybe.
I love an Adam.
It's got to be Andrew. A Christian name.
Adam's Christian.
James.
Adam and Eve.
James is basically John.
Yeah, it's very close.
Wait, you guys don't like Vance?
I mean,
Vance.
Do you like Vance? I think
how dare you, Jamie? I just think there's something like about these names, like Vivian, Vance. Actually, that's her last name.
I agree with you. I like Vance because it is like a little older, and I think that he would have maybe a name that was reflective of like how he's kind of an old soul.
John is very first thought off a big.
It's also like a John is like a male escort. Yeah. I don't know. There's something about it. Where you're like, all right.
Okay, but the only reason why I was thinking was Vance is because he's just so schmaltzy and listens to Frank Sinatra and he loves the
Reds. Yeah, I don't mind Vance.
Thanks.
Yeah, especially Vance. Vance is fine. I'll call him Vance. Thanks. I think that's fine.
Thanks.
Okay, so, oh, yeah. Wow, okay. I was about to, like, do more plot and I'm like, oh, we're actually done. Okay, so now we're going to talk about the statement of the episode. Different from the question of the episode because it does end with a statement, right?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, it's a whole big, elaborate thing.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Later that day, I got to thinking about relationships. There are those that open you up to something new and exotic.
This scene is just unreal.
Those that are old and familiar. Those that bring up lots of questions. Those that bring you somewhere unexpected. Those that bring you far from where you started. And those that bring you back.
Some really athletic sex.
The most exciting, challenging, and significant relationship of all is the one you have with yourself. And if you find someone to love the you you love.
Hi.
What's shaking, baby?
How's Napa?
The house is on the market. Look out, New York. I'm a-coming.
Well, that's just fabulous.
That is a great song, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, hats off to the writers, directors, producers, actors, editors. This is just a perfect television show. And I often say I teach screenwriting to students, and I always say that it's more of a craft than an art because it generally is. But this isn't art, I think. I think they've elevated it in this case.
Yeah. I mean, also everything we were just talking about, like with, you know, what is Big, you know, going to rescue her from Paris and all this stuff. I really do feel like this last line boils down exactly what we were all saying, even in agreement and disagreement. I feel like this is kind of the conclusion. I really do feel like it sums it all up.
I think that it's something that's very hard. I mean, I keep bringing this up because we're writers and it's not just watching a show. We're also thinking about how we write our own shows and the shows that we work on. And it's exceedingly difficult to end a beloved show well. I mean, there's a lot of cases of beautiful shows that they just shit the ending.
Yep.
And I just feel like this is just a masterclass in like concluding a phenomenal, every single writer and creator on the show is just did a fucking beautiful job.
Yeah. And also, I think it's hard to say. I mean, even if I think this ending is amazing, even if this ending were like a a solid B minus, I would still be like, hats off. I just think it's so hard to end a fucking series. Like, landing the plane, we have seen it so many times. There's so many great shows that just don't do it. And the fact that this one just like nailed the fucking finale, like even if there were things that we didn't like about it, whatnot, it's like, it really, it's just really well done. They just did a very good job as writers.
Agree.
Okay, well, guys, this brings us to our final fucking segment I'm horny for. Sex and the City is obviously a very horny show, so we end each episode by sharing what we are currently horny for. Rose Cerno, what are you horny for right now?
Okay, this is cheating, and you're going to be annoyed because then you're going to have to do the same, but I'm
going to do two.
No, I'm horny for my core three that have been with me since the beginning of this. You know, Jamie and I have been friends for a long time. We met in New York doing stand-up, but weren't that close at the time, and then ended up working together in LA, and then just really got along like gangbusters, and you asked me to do this podcast, and I thought it was a great idea, and we've grown so close over the last couple of years, and I'm so grateful. I'm so happy to know Skylar. Skylar, I just think the world of you. And
I mean, I love working with all of you. Like, it's all
like this podcast. I feel like I'm like getting like my eyes are getting glassy, but like I've been through it with like my fertility stuff, my back, COVID, panic, anxiety. Like it has been there through the whole time, and I feel similarly to the ending of this show as the ending of this portion of our podcast. We're just like extremely lucky to have you guys.
Yeah. And I feel that too.
Extremely, extremely lucky to have our listeners who have sent amazing, beautiful, supportive messages that, you know, I feel like we do this and we're just talking to each other and we're looking at each other and there's really not a conception of other people even listening. And so when you guys reach out, and mostly ladies and guys reach out to us, it's just, it's been a lot of meaningful exchanges. So I'm very grateful to Jamie for this would not exist without her beautiful brain and efforts and talent. So.
Oh, well, that was the best horny for in the world. I don't feel like that's everybody's horny for. Should I do like a classic stupid one just to round it
out? Yeah, do a classic stupid one.
Can I do? Yeah. Okay. I'm going to pick a really dumb one.
Do
guys.
A dumb one.
Okay. I am horny for fried calamari that does not have other dumb stuff fried mixed into it. I don't need a Frito Misto. I had fried calamari the other night and it had like fried peppers mixed in with it. No.
Disgusting.
Don't overcomplicate it. Just give me the squid, people. Give me the squid.
That's actually a very profound one that everyone can agree with.
I mean, hashtag give me the squid.
Once Jamie like moves to New York, all of her horny fours and who am I's are just like New York Italiano culture.
I know. The next one. When we are going to keep doing episodes. This is not our final episode of this podcast. I do want to make that clear. But it is funny if my horny four is like not getting a mob hit. Like it's just going to get very Sopranos
over Bill de Blasio
here.
This week.
Yes. Yeah.
Look, I'm horny for my cousin Vinny, not the movie, but my friend who's actually my cousin.
I'm horny for not having a decapitated horse head in my bed. That was a Godfather reference. I'm really proud. I watched that during the pandemic. Anyways, I'm very horny for both of you in this podcast. And yeah, next week we're going to have a bridge episode, and then we're going to do the fucking movies, which I think we're talking about doing in two parts just because.
Good idea.
They
I love
long.
It.
Yeah.
Get ready. Oh my God. When we do Sex and the City 2, I mean, God, that's like.
That'll be so much fun.
Start popping your popcorn, getting your snacks ready now, because that's going to be a real treat when we dive into that one. It's a fucking crazy movie. Anyways, we love you guys and thank you for being such an awesome audience. And yeah, like Rose said, really, there's a really great community around this podcast. And we're really grateful for you guys.
Okay, love you guys.
Okay, love you.
Thanks for listening to Couldn't Help But Wonder. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at CHBWPod. And follow my co-host, Rose Cerno, on Insta and Twitter at Rose Cerno. And please follow my co-host, Jamie, at ReallyJamieLee on Instagram and at TheJamieLee on Twitter. And please rate, review, subscribe to our show on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast app. If you're nasty, it helps us, it helps you, it helps everyone.
You nasty.
Bye.
Bye.
Forever. Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production, executive produced by Joe Cilio, Alex Ramsey, and Brett Boehm. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcast.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram at Forever Dog Team and liking our page on Facebook.